Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to the Leather Rose. This is Jefferson Tranche stepping in for Davis Grimley, who was wilding out and got attacked by bees in Miami. He's doing fine, recovering as the human body does, this incredible organism that we all get to inhabit temporarily on the strange journey of life. And part of that strange journey for me is getting to host my favorite podcast, The Leather Rose. We've got a great guest for you today. Somebody no doubt you know of, even if you don't know his name. Kelly Waddleprime is the chief redactor for the CIA. This is the man who tirelessly, for decades, has been in charge of laying down those black rectangles over the great secrets that the United States government cannot reveal. Is it to protect us, or is it something more sinister? He's just released a book, which is now the number one New York Times bestseller, The, by Kelly Waddleprime. And it's hard to say what this book is about from the cover. It looks like most of the cover has been redacted. So, Kelly, what did you redact on the cover of your book?
Hi, it's great to be here. For one, I'm so happy to be on the program. I've been listening to Leather Rose for a long time, and I'm sad to hear about Davis, but I know that he's got quite a bit of constitution, so
he does.
Happy to be here.
His love of honey brought him down.
Yeah, honey. I actually love honey, too. I discovered honey when I was in Egypt doing my sabbatical, and I fell down I accidentally discovered a tomb by falling into a well. Well, let's be honest, it was a toilet.
Yeah.
But I
are you sure you didn't shit in just somebody's well?
Well, I redacted that, but now I'm I've been allowed to unredact it because it's been 5 years.
Great.
And I did. I was shitting in someone's well. I thought it was a toilet, but it was a well.
That's one of the problems. I'm sorry to cut you off, but in Egypt, that's, you know, and who am I to give advice to any other country? But why make your wells look exactly like toilets? It's, if you've ever been to Egypt, you know, and you just, you look out and you're about to tinkle and someone's like, not in my well. And you're, well, it's inside. There's a restroom sign above it. Well, I don't understand why they do that.
Yeah, I think it's a translation issue. Have you been to Egypt, Jefferson?
Oh yes, oh yes. I'm a lover. I'm an Egyptophile, and I love going out to Egypt and just wandering the dunes.
I'm actually hosting a Viking cruise, a 3-week-long Viking cruise up the Nile.
Wow.
And it's paired up with PBS and with Bremer Cracker Wafers. And we're doing a cheese tasting and a honey tasting on the Nile River on Viking cruises, which typically is a European excursion.
Yeah.
So we're very excited. I'll be hosting that, and I'll be teaching people how to redact their lives.
This brings us, I think, into one of the many interesting things about your philosophy of redaction. You know, a lot of us, we get frustrated, especially people like me who are interested in the mysteries of the world and that which they don't want us to have access to. You follow the Freedom of Information Act, and you'll never forget the first time that manila envelope arrives at your door. They send it to you, and then you open it up, and it's all black ink. You don't know what's under it. And it's frustrating. But for you, it's an art. The art of redaction. Talk about that.
Well, I first learned about redacting when I was taking a four-month-long haiku class in Hokkaido in Japan.
Yeah.
I fell in love with haikus as a young boy growing up in the tidal region of South Carolina. And I just loved haiku because my great-grandpappy said the ocean speaks in haiku. It goes like, do-do-do, do-do-do-do-do, do-do-do. I was like, what is that? He said, that's a haiku. How about you? And he actually didn't know about haiku at all. He was making a joke.
Right.
Because he never left the city. He wasn't allowed to, actually. I can't speak on it, but it had to do with some criminal enterprises he was involved in.
Right.
So he was not allowed to leave. So he made up the world around him by guessing and reading through books and just surmising ideas.
Right.
And that got me into haiku, and I thought, like, how cool is it that you can say so much with so little?
So much.
And so essentially, that's where the CIA gets their redactors, is through poems, the International Poetry Symposiums.
Now, that's something I didn't expect to hear today. The Central Intelligence Agency recruits poets to redact. Talk about that.
Well, if you ever read any E.E. Cummings, you'd understand that syntax is part of the language, where you can put, let's say I have the word "the," like the title of my book. I hate the shameless plug, but
It seems like there's more to the title. You've redacted every other word on the cover. Any clues about what the title of the book could be?
Well, that is the title of the book. You have to think about where it's located in the frame. Is it at the top? Is it at the middle? Is it at the ending?
It's at the middle.
So it could be. It could. "The" is the beginning of the word "theater." But you don't know if it's going to go on to say theater or it's going to just say "the."
Right.
There's all kinds of words that start with a word that's not a word, that's that word.
Right.
And if you flip out and scrap it and dump it upside down and maybe black out part of it, you can make a new word. And that's how all the great poets since Jim Washburg, Carlo Monet, Testafade, the Northern Spanish region.
Yeah.
Her work is, I'm a big fan of her work because she would do called cut them up. She would take the biggest book she could find,
right,
and she'd decide, how can I make this into a story that's different?
You just cut it up. Well, I mean, let's look at some words like that.
All right.
You know, for example, spag. You know, which is it's a derogatory. It's a slum.
For Germans,
German shit dog is a spag, and that could refer to any dog.
I'm surprised you're even allowed to say that.
I got bitten by
spag.
You can say spag.
You were bitten by a spag
in Germany. I was bitten by a spag on the ankle, and you know, it got infected, and I had to keep my foot in hydroponic solution. I did catch that spag, and I dropped him into a jar of chloroform, and I have him in my bathroom to this day.
Just to remind you not to ever do that again.
And as a form of protection, you know, that if a spag comes into my house, he's going to see that there's a spag in a jar and probably not want to stay around.
I was always told that you only get bitten by a spag if you've eaten too much prosciutto. And once you've had a ton of prosciutto, they can smell it because it's coming out your pores.
This is true.
And they're like, and it's a warning, don't eat so much prosciutto. Look, do not.
This is a price you pay for a love of good prosciutto, and that's why I went to Germany.
Ham.
Yeah, Parma ham prosciutto.
Yeah, I love prosciutto. That's why I get it shipped here, because I don't want to get spag bitten.
No, you know, it's safer to eat prosciutto in the United States, and that's not some nationalist thing. That's just the facts. But
it's true. It's
you're not
going
to get that
here.
Fresh prosciutto. You're not going to get that when in Germany, when you watch them with their razor blades slicing that thin prosciutto down. Translucent. There's actual homes in Germany where the walls are prosciutto.
Made of prosciutto.
And it is just a delight. And you go into those homes and you just have to use every ounce of your willpower to not pluck a little prosciutto off the wall and have a taste. And those
dogs. I just want to suck it down.
You want to lick
the walls. You know what I want to do? I want to go on there. There's a saying I used to say, is it greedily take sup. I want to just greedily take sup of that wall.
That
salty wall.
That's why you're right.
Sort of a skin like.
Greedily take sup.
I love a skin wall. I wish to greedily take sup on your salty wall, Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. And you can find the best prosciutto cafes in Germany just by listening for the howling of those spags, because they surround them. There's sometimes
that makes so much sense now.
10, 20 spags hiding under a dumpster, hiding behind cars, just waiting for people to walk out with a belly of fresh prosciutto and that aroma of hormones, pleasure hormones.
Skunky stank. Because it does stink.
They'll bite you.
My wife does not let me keep prosciutto in the home. I have a special man cave in my garage that's meant just for my prosciutto.
My prosciutto man cave.
And even then, she's like, Kelly, do not open the door on the front of your man cave because it'll wash into the home and we'll have these kids. Because kids are sensitive to that smell, and they'll get spaggy.
Oh, yeah.
They'll have a spag fit. My son, who he is, he only has 1 foot, but he does great because of technology. My one-footed son, Beaumont, he has a lot of friends. He's very popular at his school. He has some kids over.
Yeah.
And these kids just went, because he's accustomed to the smell of prosciutto.
Yeah.
I give him taste once a month on a new moon. But these kids he had over from the school, they were just going buck wild, spag fever, and they didn't know what was happening.
It hits you hard that first waft. I mean, remember as a child when I got wafted down. But your child, now this, I didn't know about Beaumont Wattle Prime. I imagine it's in your book. It seems like you may have redacted it, but it is a wonderful thing to hear that a child with a challenge of having a mono foot is beloved in his school.
This episode of the DTFH has been supported by Hims. Guess what this old man has? Type 2 diabetes. And guess what? They put me on a GLP-1. It was for my blood sugar, but miraculously, I lost more weight than I've ever lost in my life. And I like that. You know, sometimes you hear people talking about people using GLP-1s to lose weight. Like, you should only use it for diabetes. That is such horseshit. These things are like next level, pre-singularity, powerful, incredible medications. Hims probably doesn't want me to say this, so I need to say this is my own subjective experience with a GLP-1, but it doesn't just make it so that you stop having infinite food cravings, which is, by the way, incredible. Anybody who's gotten into the situation where your body is no longer sending out whatever signals it sends out that tells you you're full, knows what I'm talking about. You graze, you eat everything and more and keep eating. And then suddenly it's the craziest thing. This is, again, my own subjective experience. It's like when I watch my kids eat. They're done. It doesn't matter. They'll half finish a dessert. They're done because they're full. That's healthy eating. It's like suddenly you go back to that and it's nuts. But also, I've noticed my alcohol cravings have almost gone away, not completely, but it's just a fascinating, incredible drug. You should look it up, check it out. And here's what's awesome. GLP-1s are incredible, and that's why Weight Loss by Hims now offers access to the FDA-approved Wegovy pill and the FDA-approved Wegovy pin. Wegovy is designed to help you lose weight and keep it off so you could stay on track with your goals. With Wegovy at Hims, lose up to 20% more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there are no needles needed. Through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits into your world and your wallet. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/Duncan to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/Duncan, hims.com/Duncan. Weight Loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com. Thank you, Hims.
Absolutely. I have one foot as well. That's our name. We are Waddle Prime. That is what the name comes from.
I see. Actually. Waddle Prime. I get. And this is your fan. This is a familial, generational one-footedness.
Yeah, as far as I know, seven generations back, and that's as far back as we can trace, actually.
What do you think's the eighth generation? Now, that's a little bit of redaction. But that's a kind of universal redaction, which is where do the Waddle Primes, what do you think happened that y'all only have one foot?
I think probably it was some sort of a deficiency at some point, maybe. We just really don't know. I wish I could find out. But
a vitamin deficiency, you mean, or like a...
Well, I was told by my great-grandpappy, he said that he took it off, his daddy took it off when he was born. It's like sort of like a type of a foot circumcision sort of thing.
Oh, a foot and circumcision. So, I mean, it makes me think of the castrati, you know, the this is the eunuchs of old that were assigned to guard brothels, and you could trust them because they'd had their balls and nib dicks chopped down.
They got nibbed up. They got no balls. Some of them would have big members though, but they had no balls. And I think it's similar to that. And I love Italy. So I've always loved Italy. I grew up just loving Italy. We went to Italy once. You've been to Italy in Las Vegas?
I love Italy in Las Vegas.
I love the fresh pasta when it comes out of the pasta cutter. Mm. And they let you go up and cut it if you want.
I didn't know that.
I said, put it in my mouth. Just don't even cook it. If you give them $20, they'll let you stand up. They'll put a black cloth around everything so you can't be seen. You can put your lips right up to that roller, and they'll put that fresh lasagna in your mouth like a. It's like eating a tongue.
You're talking about the sausage walls of Italy.
Yep, this is the sausage walls of Italy. Yeah.
Now the sausage walls of Italy. I wish that I had the access and the status to even be invited in to one of these rooms, as they call them. It's true, though. It's just like a sampler tray, except it's sausages coming out the walls.
Chamberisco, that's what I've always known Chamberisco. As Chamberisco.
And you can just taste and each of these sausages and other lovers of sausage are in there with you also.
Straight from the pipe.
What's it like?
It's just wonderful. It's one of those things where I will do a sodium fast for a month in advance so I can handle that much sodium. Otherwise, it will kill you. It will turn you into a crystal. Like Lot's wife in the Bible, which we obviously have to reference because that's the original text of life, is the Bible. Lot's wife turned a pillar of salt, and that's because they had just initially invented these type of these meatballs.
Now that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting because the common understanding of that story, the story I was told as a child, is that Lot's wife turned, God told her, "Don't you better not look back." And she turned around and looked, as a lady will, and she got turned into a pillar of salt. You're saying she was crystallized from a sausage sampler.
She did look back. She did look back, but you know what she was looking back for? She just remembered that Chamberisco that she just came from. And salt, when salt's in a fine crystalline powder, it can function as a wave, an invisible wave, and it will inoculate you in the face. And it's the straw that broke the camel's back, but it's the salt of grain of salt that filled up the coffer of your salt hole. Yeah.
You gotta wonder though, you think they went back to Gomorrah to gather up salt when they needed it, you know, knowing that there was like a city with all that salt? Or do you think they avoided that salt? And I guess as another question to add to that question, can you talk about what the salt of Gomorrah might have tasted like?
I have done a little research on this. One of my associates, Garrison Fumble, he actually is an expert. He put out a book called Salty Salt, and that's a great place to start if you want to talk about ancient salt seabeds.
Mm-hmm.
And his work, Garrison's work, it just talks all about this. But the thing is, from what I've gathered from his research, is the taste of it, sort of like a modern-day fruit punch. Have you had fruit punch lately?
You know, I can't believe you're bringing this up. I woke up this morning. I've been suffering from insomnia. First time I've gotten a good 4 hours of sleep in years. And I woke up, and my wife is at my bedside with a bowl of fresh fruit punch. It's like she
fresh fruit punch,
and she just ladled it right into my mouth there in the bed, just knowing.
Oh God, just thinking about it, it gets me ready to go.
It wakes you up
because it's the mixture. You got cherry, pineapple, orange, lemon, lime, probably
persimmon,
Persimmon, there's some sort of a red fruit that's good in there. Strawberry, I think, watermelon is the key to fruit punch. Watermelon.
And you know, I mean, the missing ingredient that I'll go to a punch party, and I'm happy to be invited anywhere these days, so I'm not judging. But you go to a punch party, and if they haven't salted the punch, they don't know fruit punch. It's that really salt. Add that salt.
It might as well be pond water that they dyed red if they didn't salt the punch.
That's what I'm thinking.
It doesn't take much salt either. A little bit.
Just a little bit of salt in your fruit punch, and it is just the fountain of youth. And it just wakes you up. It reminds you of God's grace in this earth, and it shows us that things are getting better.
I just taste it right now on my lips, that sweet, tangy fruit punch where no flavor stands out.
No.
Every flavor is blended together in a harmonious, resonant frequency of pure red.
It's the yo-yo Ma. It's the yo-yo Ma of drinks.
It is the Celine Dion of sippers.
Neil deGrasse Tyson of refreshment.
It is the Walter Payton of drinks. It is the Michael Jordan of taste. I would call it maybe even the
Messi of picnics.
The Messi, that's a good one, Messi, because he's a player, and Fruit punch can be messy. I mean, that's why they have the habit staining a child's lips. If it doesn't stain their lips, you could accidentally give them too much. But you see that stain, like, ooh, baby, you've been having the fruit punch, I know.
You know, it brings to mind my favorite Cormac McCarthy passage in his book, Abbreviated Blister. The child's lips crimsonated like an old beggar's shawl wiped through a strawberry field beneath a cracked and cursed cloudy sun.
Ooh, baby, that's a passage. Right. That just tells the story.
It's chilling and beautiful.
You know he's talking about fruit punch. He's talking about a mustache.
McCarthy always has a bowl of fruit punch by his typewriter when he writes.
Yeah.
In interviews
he really
talks
has a way.
Look at his lips, permanently stained.
He could take a newborn baby and make it sound like the devil, the way he describes it. He can take the sweetest piece of rotisserie chicken you've ever had, and it's like, you just ate a piece of burnt shit or burnt poo-poo for that. Sorry, I didn't mean to curse.
It's okay.
There.
We can redact that.
Can you bleep it out? I would appreciate if you bleep it out. Because shit, to me, is not really a curse unless you're saying, like, oh, you're a shithead.
Oh, yeah, that's actually an ancient curse. That's a real curse, a Babylonian curse, a Mesopotamian curse. It has its roots, of course, in the Indus Valley region, but never say that to a person.
No, I would never.
Now,
say it to a person in passing.
I feel like when you make a friend for life, which I think has happened between us, Kelly.
Absolutely. Yes.
You get distracted and you don't get into the meat of the interview. And I want to do you the honor of giving you the interview you deserve. You have been working in the CIA. Redacting, and mm-hmm. which to me tells me that you know every secret because you're the one who wipes those lines black. Now tell me, what do you know? What have you seen? And how do you deal with the anxiety of knowing every single national, international, global and potentially cosmic secret that exists in the world?
Well, let me start off right now and tell you that travel is my I got the bug.
Me too.
And I travel once a month. I make an international trip. Yeah. And it's paid for
by the CIA.
The CIA pays for it because they know. And different people in the department, some of them have different type of thing they're into. Some are really into chocolate. Some are really into mountain biking.
Yeah.
Some of them are super into gardening. Actually, there's one guy, but he kind of flunked out.
And this gardening. This is redactors. Are you saying the entirety of the CIA?
Well, a lot of these redactors started as jostlers.
Well, now what's that? I've never heard of a jostler.
A jostler is someone who shakes a person and says, tell them, like, you got to stop, cut it out.
Oh, yeah. Okay, a jostler. Yeah. I got you. Wait, now, who do they do that to? Like, is this like some form of pre-assassination? Or what people are you jostling?
Well, usually it's gymnasts, young gymnasts, and most people who were started as jostlers, they were former Soviet Eastern Bloc countries, and they would do this to their gymnasts. They would, you know, jostle them to shake them out of their funk.
Oh, right, just to get them going.
Yeah, because they're very physical people, obviously. Sometimes dancers get jostled by the dance teacher who's a jostler.
Oh, yeah.
It's not talked about much. It's kind of a
Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil. Do any of them get jostled?
Oh, absolutely, constantly. I would say they jostle each other sometimes on purpose. Sort of like dipping your face in water. Or something.
Okay, that splash. That's just a cold splash. Wake you up.
Yeah, more convenient. Maybe it's better than a slap. A slap can sting and burn and leave a mark. A jostle, an adult. No one under 5 should ever be jostled.
No, don't jostle a baby.
Yeah, do not jostle. If you're over 18, you should only jostle people who are also over 18. And if you're under 18,
consent.
You can jostle.
What about consent? Or does the CIA just send people in to jostle without consent? I mean, it is, you know, I understand. I mean, no one consents to getting assassinated. No one consents to being gang-stalked.
Well, it's kind of a one-way street where we get people who are jostled. They start as jostlers, and then once they join the CIA, they stop jostling.
Oh, I see. So you're talking about in the wild, like this is yeah. Jostlers in the wild. These are the people. Okay, now I know you're. Mm-hmm. I've been jostled in a cafe. Who hasn't? You know, someone comes up and just shakes
like maybe
you.
for picking up someone's order, and they like, "What are you doing? Yeah. Why did you take my order?"
Yeah,
and you're like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and it really. It scares the goddamn bejesus out of you.
Oh, God. That's,
jostled by a stranger.
It scares you to death. It gives you nightmares when you get a good jostling.
It's wicked.
And I do that sometimes. I'll go into a cafe and take people's orders, and it's not for any other reason than that if they seem understaffed. Well, I've never thought of that, but I guess that's something to bring up with my psychologist is maybe I'm doing it because I want the jostle.
A lot of people subconsciously are doing that. They don't know it, but they are.
That's the kind of thing you would know in the CIA, I guess.
But I only know it because of people who I work with. I'm not a jostler myself.
You're a redactor. You came from the haiku poetry. Now,
some of us have high IQ.
High IQ. I have no doubt that you are a genius of extraordinary proportions. Just from this brief amount of time chatting with you, I can feel your intelligence oozing through my microphone into my mouth. It's like I'm sampling little bits of your intelligence, and every single bite is savory, salty, and sweet. Reminds me of fruit punch.
Mm.
Now let's. I wanted to show you. Some documents that I wonder if you recognize them at all. Hey, Josh, okay. can you pull up one of the redacted documents I sent over?
When people hear that Mint Mobile plans are only $15 per month, a lot of people wonder, what's the catch? Well, I can tell you from firsthand experience, there isn't one. There are no gimmicks, no gotchas, just unlimited talk, text, and data. Fast, reliable coverage on the nation's largest 5G network and an award-winning care team. I guess that makes Mint Mobile a catch. Since switching to Mint, I've realized that more than likely, most people are trapped in some kind of horrific Lovecraftian, monolithic techno hell, sucked into a spiral of repetition and completely unaware of the fact that they're one phone call away from climbing out of the slimy appendages of the infinite horror that seems to have encircled our planet with horrible cell phone plans. Mint Mobile took what's wrong with wireless and made it right with premium wireless for $15 a month. You could even bring your current phone and your number. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly bill. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile. It's so easy. Sign up online and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month and the pleasure of knowing you have hammered a stake into the cyborg vampire that's trying to suck the money out of every human on this planet. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Duncan. That's mintmobile.com/Duncan. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Duncan. That's it. There's no catch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Do you know what this is? Have you seen this? It's for the listeners out there. This is a redacted.
This is actually the recipe for Coca-Cola.
That's the recipe for Coca-Cola. Uh-huh. And that made its way onto you. And you can just by looking at those bars, you know that's your work. You can recognize this as you.
Yeah, it's similar to this old idea that the Aboriginal people of Australia would talk about. You don't necessarily see the thing. You see that the thing is evidence of the thing being there.
Right.
And that is seeing the thing.
Right.
So it's sort of like working in a multi-dimensional understanding of the universe as opposed to concrete. We in the West would say, I see a bird. Look, there's a bird.
Yeah, there's a bird over there.
How the Dreamtime interpretation of that is, if you see a leaf moving in a way that would suggest a bird is behind the leaf, that's seeing a bird.
So it's, even though you might not even see that little sparrow, you might not see that mockingbird, you see that leaf move, makes you think of a bird. Bird is there. So in this case, the leaf is the redact. I got you. So just by looking at the jostling of a leaf, which is the redactor of nature, if it was bigger than a bird, I guess you could say.
Exactly. Leaves are the original redactors.
And trees, I suppose, and anything that could conceal another thing. Now, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole here, but are you of the school of thought that believes that God is the original redactor, that there's an intelligent redactor in the universe that is, in the sense you look up and you see those stars, and everybody thinks there's space around the stars, but in fact those are God's redaction lines covering up something else?
Absolutely. That's what dark matter is. I mean, we know now, we learned this, I think, 20 years ago or so, that dark matter is at least 51% of the universe. We know that. It's a fact. It's
not 55.
It's 55 now.
Went up by 4.
Wow. Well, if it goes up by 4, you know what that says?
What?
If it goes up by 4, there's probably more.
You mean it could be even higher than that, 55?
It could be as high as 99.99.
Right, you're saying, and this is coming from the CIA, 99.9 of the universe is essentially redacted.
Could be.
You can't
redacted,
say.
But also, there's
that's the kind
idea
of thing
where
you're saying it, but you're not saying it, though.
So I can't say it, but I can say that if I said it, then I would have said it.
I see.
Does that make sense?
What if I say it?
If you say it, then I can say that he said that.
So I'm saying it. 99.9% of the universe has been redacted.
And I can say, you said that. And I can say it in a way. I could say it like this. You said that. Or I could say, you said that. Or I could say, you said that.
All three
of those mean something different.
Now, which way would you say that I said that?
I would say you said it like this. You said that.
Oh, wow.
And does that tell you what you said?
Oh, wow.
How you said it? Because the way I said how you said that you said it should say how what was said.
Goosebumps.
If it was said in a truthful way or if it was said in a dark matter way. But you also have to think about perspective, too. If you are the dark matter looking at the non-dark matter,
what?
Is the non-dark matter dark to the dark matter, or is it light?
Wait, are you saying that what we think of as dark matter, that we're the dark matter, that we're the living redaction,
There's no way to know. It's like this. You know, you ever had your hair cut? You know when the barber shows you your back of your hair with the mirror, and you're like, okay, I'm seeing it, but you're seeing it in a mirror.
Yeah.
And we all know that a mirror isn't a truth. It's a reflection
of
it.
It's a reversal, even. You're seeing the reverse.
Magicians use mirrors all the time.
That's not true. I'm sorry to push back on that one, but I don't think that's true.
That magicians use mirrors?
I don't think they do. I think I've been to many magic shows. It's one of the, I love magic. And
I like it too because of the mirrors.
I've been to many magic shows and I haven't seen a single mirror. And I look, because I know there's tricks, it's magic, but I have not seen a single mirror. And I've been to over 300 magic shows, to be precise, 346. I'm going to one tonight. 347. Never seen a mirror. And I don't think they use mirrors.
Okay. Well, I feel like that you can think that. I'm happy for you to think that. Use mirrors.
I do think that, and I know it that they after a show, and I'm
you
very
talk to
shy.
Magicians after shows?
Only once. I just get so nervous around a magician. I have so much respect for the craft, and I went up to a magician, the great Lindsay, and I was so nervous. He saw it. You know, he's a good man.
They can smell it from a mile away.
He could smell it. And I went up to him. I said, I don't want a fanboy out. I have no idea how you made that rabbit come out of your pants leg. There was no rabbit. And I'm allergic to rabbits. And so if there was a rabbit in the room, I would have covered in boils. I would have been immediately covered in boils.
You would have been nasty.
I would have been a nasty, festering mess. And I said, well, what did you, is it mirrors? He slapped me across the face.
And he said.
He said, a magician never tells his tricks, you piece of shit. And I deserved it. He goes, a magician never tells his tricks, you piece of shit. But one thing I will tell you is none of us use mirrors. Now get the fuck away from me. And well deserved.
I've heard the great Lindsay's really nice, so I'm surprised he would do that.
Well, I think it's very offensive what you're saying. I gotta look out for the magician community who are probably listening to this. By now they're not. You know, I imagine many magicians have just turned off their wild ones at this moment. But
yeah, that's too bad for them. I'm sorry.
They don't use mirrors. Courage.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
how would you do that? How would that even work?
A mirror? Have a mirror with a black velvet wrapped around it, and it appears to be a pathway when actually it's a mirror. Perhaps just
why not just have a pathway?
Because the pathway would reveal that there's a woman back there who was killed.
What?
The woman, maybe, who was in a box, or on a swing, or on like a metal ring. It's a swing.
Oh, one of the a swing ring.
A swing ring. It could be a child
disappear.
With cancer.
The women disappear. I see it happen at magic
They go
shows.
Somewhere. They're going somewhere.
Well, it's magic.
Right, but the magic is, the magic is the trick, the building of the trick, the making the trick, the doing the constructing the box, maybe out of mirrors.
Oh, that's like saying the house is putting up the drywall. The house is the house.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, you're saying the trick is setting up the trick. I'm saying it's when the lady disappears. And every time gasp.
Right, but you know the lady didn't die, right?
I don't know that.
You don't know it, but you have to assume that the magician isn't just killing a woman all the time.
Well, he brought her back.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes they don't bring her back.
I've never been to that kind of show. That sounds like something you might find. I don't even know if I call that a magic show. That sounds like human sacrifice.
Well, some magicians now are daring to do a thing that's different. Like Kelvin Dietrich, I saw him in Reno just a few weeks ago.
Great magician.
And he disappeared 13, 14 women, and they never came back.
But that doesn't mean they're dead.
No,
you're saying
because
something
dead,
disappears,
right?
It's dead. That doesn't mean that.
Well, then what do you think is happening?
I don't know. If I knew, it wouldn't be magic.
Because right, but
I don't know. The women go. They go. The women go. They disappear, and mm-hmm. they come back sometimes. Sometimes
back.
They don't. They're gone. But to immediately assume that the magician is exterminating volunteers from the audience to me seems a little grim.
It is a little grim, I think. But if you don't acknowledge the fact that mirrors exist, you have to think that maybe that's what's happening.
I don't need.
Don't you think?
Okay. No, I don't. Does a mirror make the sun disappear when it becomes night? Do you think there's some kind of mirror in space that's making this the sun disappear?
No, because they don't have to be the biggest mirror ever, and that would be super hard to make a mirror
so
that
if
big.
So there, you just defeated your own whatever you're saying. If there's no mirror that makes the sun disappear, then when magicians make women disappear, there is also no mirror. That's just
logic. But there could be a black velvet. That's on the edges of it. So
why
you
do you need velvet?
Because black velvet, it looks really good for magic.
I can't argue with
like
that.
A nice look.
I can't argue with
black
that.
Black velvet. Black velvet.
Oh, I love
that. Slow southern style.
Black I love velvet that song. That
black velvet and that warm southern child.
It's new black velvet and a knees. Warm southern child.
Black velvet, if you please. And that's you know, the International Magic Hall of Fame. That's their theme song.
Now, this, I know where you're going with this, and I appreciate okay. it.
So, Black Velvet, Redax.
I used to think that y'all were up there with duct tape, black duct tape, taping it over the sentences that we aren't supposed to see. And when I found out that y'all have just spools of black velvet in the redacting room, and that it's black velvet that you're using to cover up the print. I just found that to be fascinating. Talk about that.
Well, you just basically talked about it, is that we use black velvet to do the redacting.
Talk about that.
Well, so velvet, the way it is, it's like a rabbit skin, right? It's soft. It
soft.
Has like hairs on it.
Yeah.
And each one of those hairs can grab as much light as 100 pieces of paper, 100 pieces of black paper ink that's federal ink from money. The kind of ink they use in money, this black ink.
Yeah.
Well, there's no true black. I'm not sure if you knew this.
But I had no
every
idea.
Every black is either like a dark blue, a dark purple, a dark green.
I didn't no know that. Black. There's no, but what I'm looking right now at the screen of my computer, it's just black. And you're telling me that's not black. That's green.
No, well that's if the absence of light is black, but if you have something that you're adding to something, it's color.
I see.
It's just a super dense color.
Tell me about when a photon, to quote Cormac McCarthy, the photon erupted from the broiling sun like a sad teardrop rolling down the face of a witch burning in the primordial fires of a dark huntress mask.
That's beautiful, actually. That's
when a photon makes its way from the womb of the sun and it lands on black velvet.
Yeah.
What happens to that photon? Talk about that.
The photon gets confused. It gets super confused because it's being absorbed, and it's being like, it's like a bunch of people are grabbing one guy going, hey, Grant, instead of if you were watching a concert and there was 100 bouncers on the lip of the stage, and instead of the bouncers pushing you back, they grabbed you and they threw you to another bouncer and they threw you to another one. You just got thrown around like a mosh pit.
Tossed around.
That's what the velvet does to light photons.
Like a soccer ball.
And the photon gets tired and it just goes away.
It just goes away. Where does it go?
It loses its speed and it falls into nothing. It falls into, becomes dark matter.
It slows down. The black velvet, it tosses that little photon around hither and thither, back and
hither
forth.
Hither and thither. Because light is just energy, and once energy is dissipated, it just poof.
It's
just
gone.
Poof.
So
like a magic trick.
So black velvet eats light, but it doesn't just eat it. It confuses it into non-existence, is what you're saying.
It exhausts it.
It wears it out.
Excuse me.
Well,
it was like a photon torpedo right there.
I was right there. It was like a photon coming out of the coming back out. Do they ever come out of? Is it now? You know, I'm sure you're aware of Spencer Tracy's work, and you know, I don't mean to bring up a sore subject. Spencer Tracy claims that the Black Velvet, the CIA has been using to redact these files that we all want to look at, is sucking out all the light from the universe itself, and that eventually, because of what you've been doing, there will be no more light. The sun will be drained.
There is a theory about that, but that is, the math is wrong. The math's just plain wrong. If that were to happen, we'd have to have the amount of velvet we'd have to have on hand would encircle, it could go to Pluto and back 175 billion times.
That's a lot of black velvet.
That's a lot of black velvet.
But Spencer Tracy says that even if that's true, I saw him on Oprah with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Talking about Spencer Pratt or Spencer Tracy?
Spencer Tracy, the...
Oh, great. Yeah, I love scientist,
that work. Spencer Tracy's claim is that the redaction velvet, there is a possibility of a blowback, that light, that all those photons could theoretically wake back up and they just want out. And then that could create an explosion. And this is one of the dangers, I imagine, of working around all that velvet. Have you ever heard of this or seen what they call a micro blowback, where light shoots back out of the velvet?
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Summer is here, friends. At last, the boiling sun is blasting photons upon all of us. Many of us are frying in insane levels of heat. Others of us are dealing with the crazy amount of juggling and responsibility you have to do. If you're a breeder, the kids are out of school. You're dealing with kids. You're dealing with maybe summer camps. You're dealing with family vacations. You're dealing with breakfasts, lunches, dinners, quiet times. Do I do them? When do I get a quiet time? I'm getting old, my God. Summers used to seem to last for years, but now they seem to go by in a flash of an eye. Why do I keep thinking about how I could have been a better son? You don't want to deal with all that, do you? During the summer, don't you just want to chill out? Have a margarita, catch some rays. Maybe a summer like that is actually possible with therapy. Therapy can help people better understand their needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of a summer that actually feels good. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works! With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/Duncan. That's betterhelp.com/Duncan. Thank you, BetterHelp.
I have experienced it once. I took a trip to the, not the Hadron Collider, but a similar one that's for CIA only. It's a lot smaller, but it's really good. It's real nice. They have a great snack bar there, too.
What do they serve there, that snack bar?
I can talk about this. They're not supposed to, but you can.
Okay.
they have all these snacks they make as in using the ice that's generated, the coldness that's generated from the acceleration.
Oh, I see.
Because it's this thing that happens where it's not heat. They have heat and they have extreme cold. So what they do, they have these little steak nuggets, and it's A5 Wagyu beef.
Wagyu beef.
Wagyu beef.
A5.
A5 Wagyu. Wagyu. I mean,
A5 Wagyu.
A rose by their name is just as sweet. You know what I mean?
I know
so,
that.
They have this, and what they do is they flash freeze it, and they flash burn it.
Oh, my God. And they do that in the particle accelerator.
They do it on the little side box, the particle accelerator that's attached to the cafe.
Like a side lane?
Like a side lane, yeah.
Are they launching the Wagyu into the particle accelerator? Is the meat launched?
The meat's getting launched by the puffer blow of the heat and the cold.
Okay, I see.
So it's in a bounce box, and it gets blasted around there. The little nuggets bling all around. And
this freezes the meat.
This freezes it, and then it heats it like
dragon
fire.
From the friction of the bouncing?
No, it's the heat from the... I mean, there might be some friction in there. I don't really know, because I might become a superconductor at that point. The meat becomes a superconductor. So it's because it's so cold that it's going to be like, you know,
what happens
with no friction.
Sorry to cut you off, but I must ask, I'm sure the listeners by all are wondering this right now. What happens when you launch two cubes of A5 Wagyu at, you know, light speed or close to light speed at each other?
Well, it's the best steak sandwich I've ever had. That much.
I can't even imagine how tender.
They don't even put
be.
Butter on it. They just put a little horseradish on there.
Oh, my God. And that's what you eat there.
Yeah, you have to bring your own bread, but there's a bread store, a delicious bread store right above there. And, you know, they cater to the scientists and the people who are visiting.
Of course.
It's delicious, like a baguette, like a German baguette. I don't know.
Talk about
what
that.
What it is exactly.
Talk about a German baguette.
It's super fresh. You can only have it before noon. Once the clock strikes 12:01, it gets hard as a baton.
Talk about a baton.
A baton is like a stick.
Talk about that.
A stick is something that comes from a tree that's hard, and you can use it much like the first weapon that we think probably was the first weapon called
a
shillelagh. Well, a shillelagh, it's an Irish stick. It's still used today by certain hags in the hills.
Yeah.
They have many kids. And they
gutter hags up there.
Mm-hmm. They'll have a shillelagh. It's a stick. It's the main trunk of the tree used as the blunt head, and it has the offshoot branch that's at a 45-degree angle, and you've got that. You hold on to that, and you club someone with the main stick.
You know,
the first weapon ever.
I remember my first encounter with one of those gutter hags and their batons, their foul batons. I was just lost as you could be out in the woods, and I came upon a cliff face, and I just had to get out. I was panicking, and so I just started climbing.
Up or down?
Both. I mean, it didn't seem... First, I had to go down into a crevice that cut through down. It was not a gully. It wasn't.
I argue
with my wife about this all the time. She claims it was
a
gully. It was more of a rolling dip that washed up.
A crevasse?
I wouldn't go that far.
A depression.
It was a sort of depressed gully.
Okay.
Something like a sink. And I went
in,
more of like a thickened holler. And I went down into that, and I remember how cold the mud was down there. And I just was panicked. You know how that is when you get panicked when you're hiking. And I just thought I could make it up the cliff face. There were jutting stones and such. And I'm climbing, and I remember I was pulling myself up on a ledge, and it felt like a firecracker went off on my butt. and it hurt so bad. And I looked, and there is one of those hags, and she is whomping me, and just, you know, you can't, I don't know what even, if anyone knows the language they speak, it's like a guttural gibberish, and all I knew is she wanted me off her, off that ledge.
Sounds like a paper shredder.
And they're like mountain goats. I looked up, and it was just so many of these cliff hags. They're just on this. It just, their feet are massive. Maybe that's part of why they can stand up.
Well, they're hunting for sugar in the cracks.
Looking for sugar, I guess. I just, it was like sticking your hand in a hornet's nest. These hags were hissing at me, throwing their shillelaghs down, throwing their batons. And this is, made me wonder, is this how the baton became the performance device that it is? Because, you know, you see these,
I think so.
When I see someone twirling a baton, it's different for me now because I know how deadly they are. But you think that's why they twirl batons? Talk about that.
I think so, because if you look at a baton, if you put spikes on a baton, you would have a weapon that is just unstoppable. There's stories of an offshoot of the hags called Sporners.
Sporners.
Sporners. And these Sporners would have these batons with spikes on them, and they could, one Sporner could take on a village of 1,000 Normans.
Dear God.
They would just spike them up.
Is this a hag offshoot, or is this also a hag? The Sporner is like in the hag category, or is this
an offshoot, but they got offshoots so long ago that it became a totally different thing.
Like, Josh, pull up a picture of a hag.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm surprised you can find any picture of them. Honestly, they should have been redacted.
Just see if you can find a picture of a hag. We use it. Oh, dear God. There you go. Pull it up. Pull it up.
Well,
can you enlarge it with a hag? Can you enlarge a picture of a hag, Josh? Zoom in.
That's not real.
Well, that's not a hag. Go back, Josh. I just need to see.
That's a witch.
Right here.
That's a witch.
No, that's a hag. Now, which of these is a hag and which is a witch?
Well, I can't really say that. I'm not allowed to do that.
What about that? Would you? Can you make that bigger?
That's old hag. That's a chicken quesadilla right there.
That's a hag.
That's a chicken quesadilla.
Look at that. That's a hag.
I'm looking at a chicken quesadilla.
Talk about
right
that. Talk about that.
Okay, I'm seeing colors of yellow from the Monterey Jack.
So you can't even, I get it. I didn't mean to put you in this position. So this is what happens when a redactor sees something that is yet to be redacted, but should. You call it a chicken quesadilla.
I'm not,
because everyone saw it. Everyone saw that hag.
Yeah, everyone saw a chicken quesadilla. I see the green,
I'm not
going to
push you on it.
The green chilies. I see the white meat breast chicken. And the delicious tortilla, it's flour tortilla, which, you know, it's not as good for you, but tastes better. Would you say that flour is better than corn?
Absolutely.
Flour is better than corn.
Don't offer me corn. If I wanted corn, I'd go to a cornfield. I came to your taqueria because I want a flour tortilla.
You go to a flour field if you wanted a flour tortilla? You go to a wheat field, get wheat?
Baseball is back. And BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boosts, and even bonus spins, all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boosts. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB Odds Boost Tokens and MLB Parlay Boost Tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Promotional offers may vary by market. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards may vary. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Well, I've never quite looked at it that way. But I guess that's why I'm where I'm at and you're where you're at. It was about time to wrap this interview up, but it was so wonderful being here. Before I let you go.
I do feel like I have a lifelong friend here. You should come out. I'm going to Upper Norway next month, and we're doing a symposium there. It's invite only. I'm extending an invite to you and maybe three of your friends.
I'll be there with Josh, and I'll be there with a special person that I want you to meet. I would love that. I'm going to redact the name. But
okay, if you don't redact it, I will, so it's okay.
Before I let you go, one thing that so many people love in a podcast like this, and certainly the Leather Rose, they come here not just for stories, mystery, and the deep cuts that we give them here on the Rose, but they come here for inspiration. What message do you have for the world right now, which is in such challenging, tumultuous times? What do you have to say to the women, the men, and the children, and the babies of the world, and the elderly?
My message to the women and the men, the babies of the world, would be to, it's a simple message and it rhymes, and that is savor the flavor. When you have any kind of a flavor at all, understand that that is quite literally an unredacted thing from the universe. Or God, however you want to take it, and
source.
Just savor it. If you got a piece of cinnamon gum, chew on it until it stops being cinnamon.
I can taste it right now.
If you're biting into a dragon fruit that's been homegrown, savor it and make sure you chew. Because when you chew more, you have less gas, and that's less space in there. So you feel more full. Mm. The food gets to power your cells better. Everything's better when you savor.
Savor the flavor. Kelly Waddle Prime, you are more to me than a friend. You are something deeper.
I appreciate it, Jefferson.
Sorry if I've got allergies right now, but you are more to me.
Allergies are bad right now.
Anyone I've ever met. Something Thank deep. You. Something. It's seismic.
Wow.
It makes me think of Cormac McCarthy's description of a lamb trembling, eyes as black as obsidian discs marked on the husk of an old derelict, beneath the deep, thick, briny effluvia of an ancient spray boy's can. Can you just, I know this is a lot to ask, but can you just
go ahead,
sing us out with a little Black Velvet?
All right, here we go.
Black Velvet man wants a child. Black Velvet in that warm southern smile. A new religion that'll bring you to your
for having me. It was a great time. I love it.
So
we'll see you in Norway. We're going to have great smoked fish and hit the sauna.
See you in Norway.
See you in Norway.